This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we continue our coronavirus coverage. Today, we want to start with prisons and jails. New numbers are out today, and they shed some light on how the coronavirus is impacting the prison population here in Massachusetts. For more, we're joined by WBUR's Deborah Becker. Deb, welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, Deb, this is the second release of a weekly report from the state Supreme Judicial Court. So let's just start there. What did we learn today?
Well, what we learned from this report today is that 637 prisoners have been released from Massachusetts jails and prisons since April 5th. And that was shortly after the state Supreme Judicial Court required weekly reports as part of a ruling that it issued on April 3rd. That ruling said some prisoners would be eligible for release because of this pandemic. So the report says since April 5th, 548 prisoners have been tested for the coronavirus. 214 have tested positive. That's about 39% of the prisoners tested came up positive. And we should say that this is testing of the more than 14,000 people being held in both state prisons and county jails. The report also says that more than 150 workers at jails and prisons have tested positive.
So you just mentioned this April 3rd ruling by the Supreme Judicial Court. That's what this report comes from. Can you explain that a little more?
Right. So the ruling said some prisoners are eligible to be released because of the pandemic. And that includes people who are being held pre-trial, those who are incarcerated on some parole and probation violations. And as part of that ruling, the SJC appointed an attorney, what it calls a special master, to collect data from each county sheriff for the jails and from the State Department of Correction for state prisons. They're supposed to submit information each week regarding the number of people tested and the number of positive tests. And this was a way to see how the virus is spreading in correctional settings and if further action from the high court might be necessary.
So testing is a question. What kind of testing rates are we seeing inside the facilities? Does the report give you that level of clarity?
Well, the report suggests that there is not a lot of testing going on. As we said, about 39% of those tested were positive, but it's 548 prisoners tested out of 14,000 people. Also, the report indicates that 9 jails tested fewer than 10 prisoners in total for each of them since April 5th, and 3 jails tested no prisoners. We spoke with Liz Matos with Prisoners Legal Services in Massachusetts about this, and this is what she said.
There are a number of county jails that have not tested anyone. They have tested no prisoners whatsoever, despite having correctional officers and staff testing positive for COVID. So I think it's really hard to argue that we're doing the amount of testing that we need to be doing.
And she also questions the number of prisoner releases, more than 600. She wonders whether some of those prisoners might have been released anyway, and were those releases because of the SJC ruling on April 3rd, or were some of them releases that were already scheduled?
Okay, so according to today's report, since this ruling from the SJC on April 3rd, more than 600 prisoners have been released from county jails and state prisons, you know, resulting from coronavirus concerns. Why do jails represent such a high-risk population, and what is the argument behind releasing prisoners out of that concern?
Well, the argument is that the virus will spread quickly in these congregate housing settings, as they're called, because for one thing, it's impossible for people to adhere to social distancing standards and stay 6 feet apart. Also, many of the proponents argue that prisoners have pre-existing health conditions, which can make them more susceptible to the virus. And they say that this threatens the lives of many prisoners. So the state and the county sheriffs should take steps to reduce the population, which would then mitigate the spread of the virus.
And do we have any evidence that releasing inmates has helped slow the spread inside the facilities at all?
Well, it appears that less than 5% of prisoners have been released. And the virus does appear to be spreading. We've been tracking it since the first case of a prisoner being infected was reported on March 21st, and it has steadily gone up to now hundreds of prisoners and staff at jails and prisons. So it looks like it is continuing to increase. There are also now 5 deaths reported in state prisons. 4 are at the Massachusetts Treatment Center in Bridgewater, and 1 is at MCI Shirley. So it's unclear about exactly what the releases may be doing here. Liz Matos, again, with Prisoners Legal Services, is asking for better data.
We still have a lot of questions about what the data actually reflects. It's hard to imagine that those are all releases that would not have happened without the SJC order.
And also, we should point out that the American Civil Liberties Union of Massachusetts and the State Public Defender Agency have filed a complaint against the Department of Correction asking for more specific data.
What about public safety concerns in releasing some of these prisoners back into community, Deb?
Yeah, there are some who say that releasing prisoners could pose serious public safety threats. And some argue that many prisoners are safer inside. They say prisoners will receive medical care and can be properly isolated, and many prisoners don't have a release plan or anywhere to go if they're released from incarceration. Bristol County Sheriff Thomas Hodgson is among those arguing for folks to stay inside and serve their time. This is what he says.
The judges to just presume that everybody's unsafe in a place where they're probably more safe than they are on the outside is kind of troubling.
I also spoke with an attorney whose client tells him that he has COVID-19 and he is incarcerated at the Massachusetts Treatment Center in Bridgewater, which has dozens of cases. Attorney Michael Nam Crane says his client, Mooney Moses, tested positive for the virus and was given Tylenol and an inhaler.
He was basically left in his cell and given what you would, you know, give a child for a flu, not an adult for the coronavirus.
And he says his client is recovering, but he says better treatment is needed to deal with this disease behind bars.
And Deb, how do we in Massachusetts compare to other states in all of this?
Well, some other states have taken broader steps to release prisoners. Some governors have granted clemency. The state of California, for example, fast-tracked the release of 3,500 prisoners to try to reduce the population in its correctional settings because of the pandemic.
So that's WBUR's Deborah Becker. Deb, I hope you'll stay right there. I want to turn to another perspective on this story. Lisa Newman-Polk is an attorney and licensed clinical social worker who worked at Susa Baranowski Correctional Center from 2013 to 2014, and she joins us now. Lisa, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Lisa, you're working with clients, specifically some who are serving life sentences. What are you hearing and seeing in working with them during the pandemic?
Yes, I have 12 clients who are serving life sentences. I've worked with almost all of these men for a number of years, so I work very closely with them. Most of them call me many times, at least once a week. So I'm getting a lot of reports from across the state in different prisons. In addition to the, of course, concern about contracting this illness and having basically no control over their health care inside, and their ability to clean around them and maintain a space that allows them to be free of this disease. Right now, they have been subjected to a lockdown in the prison since April 3rd, and this is taking an enormous toll on the people I work with. So just to explain what that lockdown looks like, for my clients who live in prisons where they're in a cell unit, it means that they are locked in their cell for 23 and a half hours a day. They are allowed out for only 30 minutes a day onto the tier to make a quick phone call and to take a shower. Those who are living in dorms are locked in the dorm. So because of the structure of the dorm, obviously the men are all congregating together. They actually, the couple clients I have in those settings have actually been slightly less stressed because they're able to have access to the phone regularly and they can at least move about. But my clients who are in cells either by themselves or with somebody else are experiencing an extraordinary amount of mental anguish right now. And I just want to describe what that looks like. A cell is the size of a parking spot. It's a cement structure. It has a toilet in it. It's a really depressing location to be spending one's life, obviously, but to be in there 23 and a half hours a day and not being able to get out, not being able to have access to contact loved ones, it's been very, very difficult. And one of the problems
Lisa, I'm sorry, I want to stop you there. We have a lot I want to get to. And so I just want to ask you, based on that, what do you most want to see changed or addressed right now?
Well, I think the issue of the numbers is the main problem, because I am sympathetic to the fact that the Department of Correction has really limited options for what they can do, given the high numbers of people who are in prison. The reality of the carceral system is that we have large numbers of people in basically a small amount of space. And so there is a limited amount they can do. And I do understand that the reason for the lockdown is an effort to try to stop the spread. But
so what do you want them to do?
Well, I want them, I mean, what I want, I can't say it's just the DOC. I want the entire system to allow for more people to be released, because the SJC decision that came out on April 3rd really had a very limited impact. It mostly impacted people held pretrial. It almost had no impact on people who are in state prison serving sentences. And so it's impossible to get those numbers down unless the governor or the SJC makes rulings or issues orders that allow for that to happen.
Lisa, we heard from Deb Becker that less than 5% of the population has been released and the virus is spreading inside prisons and jails. But how do we know that for those who are released, that they're any less likely to be infected back in the community where community spread is so high?
Well, I mean, first of all, I just want to say most people who are in prison are going back to communities anyway. So this idea that we're all of a sudden going to be so unsafe is not particularly logical to me. I mean, most people are getting out anyway. So, and it's really pretty insulting to a lot of people and their families who want to take their loved ones in. We sometimes talk about the incarcerated population as if they have absolutely no one and no one who loves them and who will take care of them. That's simply not true.
I got to stop you. I don't think it's insulting to say that there's a risk of community spread in our communities, because we know there's community spread in our communities.
Well, right, but of course, I would expect from my clients what I expect for myself. I and my family, we are shelter in place. My child is out of school. So there's no different expectation for people who'd be released from incarceration that they would be doing anything different than the rest of us in society are doing.
So your concern, it sounds like, is the pushback that there are public safety concerns with releasing people early back into community in order to avoid spread either inside incarceration institutions or for those prisoners once they're released.
I mean, I think that there are many people who have home plans and places they could go where they could shelter in place, and that we also have some community mechanisms that need to be beefed up to allow for the help of people who don't necessarily have a home to go home to. The idea that prison in of itself is a safer environment, having worked inside of one, it's not. It's a degrading place, and it's not good for anyone's physical or mental well-being.
And would it be a violation of jury and court rulings for some prisoners to be released prior to the end of their sentences based on coronavirus concerns?
Well, there are much smarter lawyers than I am who are making all sorts of very good arguments for getting people released early, and I'll leave that to them. But I will just say, from reading of the briefs that are out there, I think there are some very viable arguments to get some of these sentenced people out of the prisons at this time.
That's Lisa Newman-Polk, an attorney and licensed clinical social worker who worked at Susan Baranowski Correctional Center from 2013 to 2014. Lisa, I appreciate you joining us today. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
So let's turn now to someone who's making decisions about who can be released. We're joined on the line by Middlesex County District Attorney Marion Ryan. DA Ryan, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So, DA Ryan, the latest numbers out from the state special master's report show that 40 people have been released from Middlesex County Jail since the Supreme Judicial Court ruling on the 3rd. Can you describe the process these people went through for that release?
So in Middlesex, it's a little bit unique because there are a couple of factors that have our numbers at a lower place because what it took, what had taken place before. So for the last year and a half or so, our bail policy in Middlesex is that unless we're going to be seeking a jail sentence at the end of the case, we don't request cash bail. So that means that the vast majority of individuals who are being arraigned in Middlesex County are released without cash bail to begin with. So our jail numbers were low going into this. The second piece is that we are fortunate in Middlesex to have a really good collaborative relationship, both with our law enforcement partners and with our sheriff. So the sheriff and I had begun, it was the middle of the second week of March, so probably around March 10th or 11th, we had reached out to the Committee for Public Counsel and started saying, who are the people who are held that we would assent to a reduction in bail? And through that process, we were able to release 80 people. So,
and
this is
so
all
just so
before,
I understand, DA Ryan, right, so this is all before, so these are people who would have been released either way? Okay. And what are there... I just said, okay, and are there a different type of case that has been released since the ruling on April 3rd?
Not really. I mean, we had only, as a result of the ruling, there were a category of folks that had a presumption that they would be released. Unlike some other counties in Middlesex, we only had 62 people who had not already been released, who, based on their offense, might have been eligible for release.
And
so
are the 40 number that
very,
we've... Go ahead.
Right, and of that 62, 40 of them were released. They were.
And what about the other 22?
They were not released. And it could have been for a number of reasons. We may have opposed their release. They may have been held on other process. There were actually some folks who... their attorneys might not have wanted them released at that point for some one reason or another. Those numbers in the master's report also don't reflect that we had 5 women who were released from Framingham and another 5 prisoners who were released that were Middlesex prisoners who were being held somewhere else for one reason or another.
So while I've got you, DA Ryan, I want to ask about state data that show that there were 33 coronavirus tests given to people incarcerated in Middlesex County. 25 of those tested positive. That is a really high positive rate. Doesn't that imply that there are probably more cases in the facility that aren't being tested, and there's a problem there?
Well, I think we all know, and if you listen every day, I mean, we need to be doing a lot more testing. I understand from the sheriff in Middlesex that they now have much better access to testing. They are testing at a greater scale and testing, they're better able to test their own staff and guards as well. So, you know, I think the key to this whole piece is there obviously everywhere are cases that we aren't seeing because we're not doing enough testing.
So what's your response to counties and to sheriffs where little or no testing at all has happened since the SJC ruling?
Well, I think the issue is, obviously, if you don't test, you don't find any cases. I mean, I think the Middlesex House of Correction has done a pretty good job about putting out every day when they've had positives. And so we've been able to see a pretty good pattern of what they're seeing there. We do know that as a result of the reductions in population, the Billerica House of Correction has been able to close one of its dorm units. You know, we know the dorm units weren't good in terms of the spread of the virus. They've been able to shut one of those down. They've also been able to move a lot of their inmates around to reduce the double bunking, you know, 2 people in a cell. So the one thing we know is that when you get the numbers down, striking that balance, obviously, of public safety and the needs to protect people, you can spread out a little bit more, which helps to socially distance. And if you aren't testing, you're not going to find out if you've got cases in any institution.
And DA Ryan, just briefly, When the pandemic is over, if some of these strategies have worked, might we see longer-term changes in rates of incarceration and approaches to incarceration?
Yes. I mean, one of the things is, as I mentioned, we, for the last year and a half almost, had stopped asking for cash bail. This, we're really looking carefully now at people where we've agreed to reductions in bail and there's been conditions imposed, really drilling down hard about what conditions work. Do we see those people come back? Are there some conditions that seem better suited for certain kinds of offenses than others? Now, one thing that we are looking towards is how do we learn from all of this? And how do we put into practice? You know, we've got to a better place because of some of the things we had planned for. The collaboration has helped us to do this in a way. We were able in our filing to the SJC to suggest the idea of bringing together people, which is what happened with the special master. You know, we've learned that in working this through, and it's my expectation we'll continue to put into practice what we've seen during this
That's
time.
That's Middlesex County District Attorney Marion Ryan. I appreciate you joining us. Thanks.
Of course. Thank you. Bye-bye.
So WBUR's Deborah Becker, you've been listening to the DA, before that to Lisa Newman Polk. We've got just a couple minutes here. I wanted to get your reaction to what you heard.
Well, you know, I think it's a difficult issue. I think we can say that for everyone involved here, for sheriffs and the DOC and prisoners and their families. I think it's very interesting that some district attorneys like Marion Ryan, who we just heard from, are taking action and trying to deal with, you know, the situation, which is unprecedented for all of us. But there are other district attorneys in the state who disagree with that approach. So I think different methods of dealing with this based on what county you're talking about is something interesting to note here.
And Deb, before we let you go, this has got to have been a challenging story to report on. What's it been like, and has it been hard to get the data that you need?
It has been difficult to get the data. We started creating a spreadsheet as soon as the first prisoner infected case was reported on March 21st, and it's been challenging to get the data. With the special master's report, that has been helpful to have some of this data. But I think the hardest thing about covering jails and prisons is hearing from the family members of those incarcerated. That's even without a pandemic. But now, of course, people are very emotional. One woman I spoke with called me while she was on her lunch break. She's a nurse, and her husband is incarcerated on an operating under the influence charge. He has health issues, so she's very worried about him contracting the virus. And during the call, she went into a closet at the hospital where she works and just started sobbing, asking me what she could do. So it's really heartbreaking. But at the same time, I got a call from a woman who's frightened that her abusive husband might be released early. And what should she do? So there are no easy answers here.
That's WBUR's Deborah Becker. Deb, thanks for your time today and for reporting on this.
Yeah, you're welcome.